I think to answer these questions, we need first to examine Charles's own legacy when he became king in 1660. And I think there are three things which are important here. One is just the trauma and destruction of the Civil War and the regicide. And it would be quite reasonable to assume that the monarchy simply couldn't recover from this, that it was had to be a pale shadow of its former self. Kings were mere mortals after all. Second was that the nation had been deeply divided in politics and religion. And third, and this is less obvious, Charles II inherited a much larger and more powerful state than his father. He had now a massive navy. The navy was about three times bigger in 1662 than in 1642. That's the number of ships, but there were more bigger ships as well. Charles managed to keep a modest standing army, not a terribly big one, tended to be sort of scattered in garrisons, and he inherited, above all, not a bigger revenue, but an infinitely more efficient revenue, a revenue based on taxes on imports and on sale of goods within the country, in other words, on customs and excise, rather than on a horrible ragbag of feudal rights, prerogative exactions, things which were politically very contentious and very inefficient as well. A tax-based regime can mobilise far more revenue than one based on feudal assets of monarchy. And this revolution in the revenue had been carried out basically in 2 years, in 1643-44, by Parliament. But so the king had got this big estate, he got the big navy, he got the modest army, he got the fairly uncontentious revenue, but it's all voted by Parliament. So, in other words, yes, he's got more money, but on the other hand, he has this financial dependence on Parliament. He has really very little of his own. The Crown lands are a sort of minor branch of the revenue after 1660.